Uddhava Satyaki's Uddhava Satyaki's Jaiva Vyajane Paramadhute Kikiryamana Kusumai Reje Madhupati Pati. Uddhava and Satyaki began to fan the Lord with decorated fans, and the Lord, as the master of Madhu, seated on scattered flowers, commanded them along the road. Ashruyanta Ashishaha Satyas Tatra Tatra Trijevita Nanurupa Anurupascha Nirgunasya Gunatmanaha Ashruyanta Shisha Satya Tatra Tatra Dvijerita Namurupanurupascha Nirgunasya Gunatmanaha Ashruyanta Shisha Satya Tatra Tatra Dvijerita Nanurupanurupascha Nirgunasya Gunatmana
Ashruyanta Shisha
Satyas
Tatra Tatra
Dvijerita
Nanurupanurupascha Nirgunasya Gunatmanaha
Nirgunasya Gunatmanaha
Ashruyanta Shisha Satyas
Ashruyanta Shisha Satyas
Tatra Dvijerita
Tatra Tatra Dvijerita Adurupadurupascha
Nirgunasya
Gunatmanaha
Ashruyanta Shisha
Satyas
Tatra Tatra
Vijayita
Adurupadurupascha
Nirgunasya
Gunatmanaha
Ashruyanta,
being heard.
Ashishaha,
benediction.
Satya,
all truths.
Tatra,
here.
Tatra,
there.
Dvijayitaha, sounded by learned Brahmanas.
Not.
Anurupa,
befitting.
Anurupaha
befitting.
Cha also. Nirgunasya
of the absolute.
Gunaatmanaha. Playing the role of a human being. It was being heard here and there that the benedictions being paid to Krishna were neither befitting nor unbefitting. because they were all for the Absolute, who was now playing the part of a human being. Purport. At places, there were sounds of Vedic benediction aiming at the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. The benedictions were fitting in the sense that the Lord was playing the part of a human being, as if a cousin of Maharaj Yudhisthira. But they were also unfitting because the Lord is absolute and has nothing to do with any kind of material relativities. He is Nirguna, where there are no material qualities in him, but he is full of transcendental qualities. In the transcendental world, there is nothing contradictory, whereas in the relative world, everything has its opposite. In the relative world, white is the opposite conception of black. But in the transcendental world, there is no distinction between white and black. Therefore, the sounds of benedictions uttered by the learned Brahmanas here and there appear to be contradictory in relation to the absolute person. But when they are applied to the absolute person, they lose all contradiction and become transcendental. One example may clear the idea. Lord Sri Krishna is sometimes described as a thief. He is very famous amongst his pure devotees as the Makan Chor. He used to steal butter from the houses of neighbors at Vrindavan in his early age. Since then, he is famous as a thief. But in spite of his being famous as a thief, he is worshipped as a thief, whereas in the mundane world, a thief is punished and is never praised. Since he is the absolute personality of Godhead, everything is applicable to him, and still, in spite of all contradictions, he is the supreme personality of God. Om Gaudamidantasya Gananjana Shalakaya Shakshun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Tathati Shapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Patakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Shagrajatam Shagana Raghunatam Vitam Stam Sahivam Sadhaitam Savadhutam Krishna Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Pada Sadhana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamsta He Krishna Purna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatvate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Holi Priye Vansha Kulpatarubhyascha Kripasindho Vyayvacha Pratitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Ashruyantashisha satya 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 dvijayiridaha Nanurupam rupascha nirgunasya gunam. In Tatra Tatra, here and there, the Brahmins were offering blessings, benedictions to Krishna. That in itself appears contradictory, to offer blessings to the Supreme Personality of Godhead may appear very strange. The Lord Himself is the source of all benedictions. Bharadraj is the... But because the Lord was playing the role of a human being, it was also appropriate to offer blessings to Him. In the pastimes of the Lord as a child, it seems very strange that Yashoda Mayi is chasing Him with a stick and tying Him up. After all, He is the supreme controller of our nation. But because He's playing the role of a child, it was also quite befitting, quite suitable for the Lord's pastimes, for His playing like a human child. So, Ashuryam Tashisha, Satya, the benedictions were all true. The Brahmins are speakers of the truth. But they were simultaneously anurupa and nanurupa, fitting and not befitting, appropriate and inappropriate. Because the Lord is nirguna and gunatmaka. Nirguna doesn't mean impersonal. Nirguna means no material qualities. The Lord is neither black nor white. He's neither a Brahmin nor a Kshatriya nor a Vaishya nor a Shudra. He's not, he has no material qualities. He has no material qualities. Nirguna. The Mayavadis artificially make a distinction, Nirguna Brahma and Saguna Brahma. But Eka Brahma Dutiya Nasti, there's only one Brahma. So how have they derived Nirguna Brahma, Saguna Brahma? Why are they making distinctions? If Brahma is one, why are they making these two categories of Brahma? So, Nirguna. He's Nirguna, and yet he's Gunatmaka. Gunatmaka? Gunatmana. He's full of gunas. Yam Sham Sinduram Chinta Guna Swarupa. The mind bodies can't understand his gunas because his gunas are Achinta gunas. Inconceivable. The Mayavadis can't imagine that this person who is playing as a child in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, who's playing with the coward boys, who's dancing with the gopis, who's doing so many things, could be the absolute truth and the ultimate aspect. They have to get some sort of complicated philosophy by which he becomes Saguna Brahma. Brahma affected or endowed with material qualities. But Brahma is never affected by material qualities or compromised by material qualities. Because Brahma is absolute, the qualities of Brahma are also absolute. The name of Brahma is also absolute, the form of Brahma is absolute. Not that there's one thing, Brahma, and then there are these material qualities. And when the material quality then become associated with Brahma, then Sagara Brahma. This is unnecessary.
No, don't give one. Whatever you do.
So nirgunasya, he has no material qualities, but he's full of spiritual qualities. Yes. Nirgunasya gunatmanah. The qualities of the personality of Godhead are not material. They're all transcendental qualities. Even the qualities that appear not so great, like being the quality of being a thief. Those in the mode of ignorance are generally the thieves. But when Krishna becomes a thief, then that becomes a good quality. Or rather, it becomes an absolute quality. When Krishna is dancing with someone else's wife, now that's not very good. But when Krishna does it, then it becomes transcendental. Whatever Krishna is, when he's fleeing from the battlefield, that's the quality of a coward. But when Krishna does it, it's absolute. Whatever Krishna does is absolute. Because Krishna is absolute. Whatever becomes associated with Krishna, or whatever is, yes, connected with Krishna, is also absolute. His name, his form, his place, Vrindavan, all nirguna, all free from material qualities, and yet full of transcendental qualities. And therefore, we have consistency. The Mayavadis can't explain how, if the Absolute has no qualities, the material world is full of qualities. If the Source is devoid of qualities, then how has this, even if we take it that this world is a reflection of reality, then the reality must have something that's being reflected. The Mayavadis can't at all explain where all this variety has come from. Or, for that matter, where the material energy has come from. Because if everything is one, then you can't have two. And material energy is not only one, but it has many varieties within it. So all of these varieties are supposed to be either not existent, they're illusions, but then if they're illusions, where does illusion come from? That's another kind of variety. Or however you explain it, it becomes inconsistent with the idea that the Absolute is totally homogeneous. That there's absolute oneness with no qualities whatsoever. The Mayavadi philosophy is in trouble. Whereas the Vaishnava philosophy says, no, from the beginning, the Absolute has innumerable qualities. The Absolute has innumerable qualities. The Absolute has innumerable energies. Purusha Shakti, Rividaya, Shurita. So then there's no difficulty. Just like Krishna says, Bhumirapo Nilo Vayu Kamano Buddhir Evacha Amkara Diyamehinna Prakritir Ashtadha. All these material elements, which all have qualities. Earth has sound, air has touch, water has taste, fire has form, and ether has sound. I'm sorry, earth has smell, not sound. So all of these things are there. His energies are full of qualities. These are my energies. I have so many qualities, and so my energies are endowed with qualities also. But what is the difficulty? Bhakti persons, that's a great problem. So the conclusion is that the Vaishnava philosophy makes sense, and that the Mayavadi philosophy is senseless. Ashru, Ashruyaman, Ashruyantashisha Satyas, Tatra Tatra Jitevitaha. So these learned Brahmins, by offering benedictions to the Lord, they're performing a service, enhancing the pastimes of the Lord. Nanurupanurupascha Nirgunasya Gunatman. All right, any questions?
As you're explaining this Mayavadi, that the talk of this duality which has come from nothing, it so much matches with the modern scientific view of everything came from nothing.
Yeah, therefore the scientists are attracted.
But they are like adamant about how can we like logically present the argument that, you know, there is this.
Well, that's up to you. The scientists are especially aligned with the Buddhists, as far as I see. Buddhists, they were, it's very popular anyway, now Buddhist philosophy, the idea that everything comes from nothing, or that really nothing exists, anyway, so many ideas. Or the Shankarite philosophy, either way. As long as God is out of the picture, it's okay. So it does fit with the modern scientific worldview, because the modern scientific worldview has the same point, how to get God out of the picture. Sariputta Prabhu, I thought, explained these things nicely early on in one of his PTG articles, or one of his monographs. He's made this point that you have a choice. The scientists want to have, they're called reductionists. They want to reduce everything to simplicity. We have complexity. We have so many colors, we have so many forms, we have so many things, so many forces at work. We have life, which is very complicated. We have human beings, which are very complicated. So the scientific, the program of the reductionistic scientist is to trace everything back to simplicity. So the more complex life forms came from the simpler life forms. Human beings came from the primates, who came from the fish, who came from the one-celled animals, who came from chemicals, chemical compounds, who came from simple chemicals, and so on. You get down to simplicity at the end. And that's, of course, in the biological field, but in all the different fields, reductionistic tendency, how to boil everything down to something very simple, or ultimately down to, simplicity. So Sariputta Prabhu pointed out that we have two things. We have simplicity and complexity. And in the reductionistic worldview, complexity arises from simple origins. But Sataputta pointed out by reference to something called information theory that when you have complexity arising from simple elements, then you have to have complex rules making that happen. He referred to boundary conditions and I believe the internal conditions, your basic elements, and then the environment in which they exist. So if you have a very simple system with complexity growing from it, then your boundary conditions have to supply the complexity in the form of rules or in the form of additional elements added, or in the case of the primordial soup, you've got to have cosmic rays bombarding things, and then those cosmic rays have to have some source, and so on. So either you can have very simple, a very simple system, and then very complex boundary system, or you can have very complex elements, and then you can have very simple boundaries. But you can't have both, because otherwise there's not enough information to supply the result. And we could give an example like this building. Or let's say you're making a building. So you can have very simple rules for putting it together. You take the bricks and you take the steel rods and you take the glass windows and you put them together, you know, step one, step two, step three, step four. But in that case, the initial elements have to be already fairly sophisticated. And then you can have simple rules. You just put the bricks on top of one another, you put the windows in the holes, and you put the roof on top, and that's it. But if the original stuff is very simple, then the rules have to be complex. You have to take the sand, and then you have to mix it with water, and then you have to add something else, and you have to heat it by building a fire with such and such temperature, and then you have to put them in a mold, and then you have to let them cool for 30 days and cure for so much time, and then you have to do this, and then you have to do that, and to make the glass, well, first you have to get this, and then you have to get that, and then you have to do this, and then you have to have a lot of rules. If you're going to have some very simple stuff in the beginning, some sand, some water, some mud, you know, then you better have a lot of rules, because otherwise how do you make that into a house? Otherwise, if you're going to do it in four simple steps, how to build a house in four simple steps, you know? And they do it. I mean, I spoke to some gentleman who's in the business, of building houses, and it's basically a three-part thing, you know, they take the walls, they put one here, one here, one here, and one here. This is like a 15-story building. They just put them together, you know, they add some bolts, and they've got it. But that's because they already prefabbed all those basic things. So there's only like finally four or five parts that you have to put together. But those are very sophisticated parts. Otherwise, I saw it's very simple, just four steps. But if you don't have all that, you're just starting with sand and glass, and then you have to have 150 steps. So in the cosmic manifestation, you have your choice. You can either have, you know, very simple elements. You can have carbon and oxygen and so on and so on, and have them evolve into very sophisticated life forms. In which case you need very complicated rules. Or else you start with very simple rules, you know, just a couple of simple forces, but then you have to have very sophisticated elements, which is exactly what these scientists are trying to avoid. So he pointed out that their project is doomed. And actually, even if you get it down to the simplest, you still have to explain where the elements came from, where the boundary conditions came from. You haven't really escaped the problem. if everything, you know, you have to ask. And the scientists have that problem, so they do things like, there's that Nobel Prize winning Sri Lankan guy who's trying to explain the origin of life, and he has, what is that, panspermia, that, you know, their world is full of living, like little living seeds, which have come from other planets. Okay, you just move the whole thing back one step. Now we have to say, well, how'd they get on the other planets? So he hasn't really solved the problem, he's just regressed it one step. Those who like equations can read Satipuddha's original monograph, Demonstration by Information Theory that Life Cannot Arise from Matter. Find a lot of equations there. So for those who are scientific-minded, we can offer these things in very sophisticated mathematical language. Or those who are simpler, we can just present a simple argument. But it finally comes down to the same point, that if everything, if the world is full of complexity, where does the complexity come from? And you can't really get complexity from initial simplicity. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. And what to speak of simplicity? From absolute simplicity, Brahma, the idea of an impersonal Brahma is so simple that there's no nothing in it. No varieties, no right, no left, no form, no pain, no nothing. It's absolutely stripped of all qualities, all characteristics. Can't get simpler than that. So the Brahma is you can say absolute simplicity. But how from absolute simplicity do you get profuse variety? That's the problem. Then you get those who say, well, it doesn't really exist, it just appears to exist. If it appears to exist, where does the, by what force, by what energy does it appear to exist? So then you still have a problem. So this should be explained. It is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. We just have to present it appropriately. Mm-hmm.
You are explaining about how impersonal philosophy doesn't make sense. And Krishna is all attractive. But we see that in this world, especially in India, recently one Mayavadi had a program and almost 100,000 people came. He is very attractive, his philosophy is very attractive. And we see that Krishna conscious philosophy, very few people are coming. Although Krishna is supposed to be all attractive.
Because Krishna is all attractive. What is Mami Vamsa? Not Mami Vamsa. No, give me a moment. Vistabhyaham ekam shenam. Vistabhyaham idam krishnam ekam shenas tatojaga. Just from a fraction of his energy, this whole world is created, which is attractive. Mama maya dhiratya. Maya, Krishna's maya. So just as a fraction of Krishna's attraction is invested in the material energy, and it's so attractive. People are attracted by whoever the latest movie star is. The latest beauty who appears on the screen is so attractive. But, you know, she's a bag of mucus bile and air. With some hair stuck on her head. And, you know, some fat here and some blood there. And some paste smeared on. So she's a doll of the material energy. A doll created by the material energy. And it's so attractive. So Krishna is so attractive that even his shadow is attractive. Maya is like Krishna's shadow. And Krishna is so attractive that even his shadow is attractive. Or even a little piece of his shadow is attractive. Mm-hmm. All, Krishna is all attractive. He attracts the devotees by his Satchidananda Vigraha, and he attracts the fools by his material energy. So in this way, he's all attractive. If you're a devotee, he attracts you directly. And if you're a non-devotee, he attracts you indirectly. Either way, he attracts you. I'm not attracted. Sorry, I'm not going to join. I'm not attracted to Krishna. No, you are attracted to Krishna, but indirectly. Mama vart manu vart tante manu suparta shakshya.
How can we increase our attraction to Krishna and also help others who are attracted to material energy, help them increase their attraction to the, not the shadow, but the real Krishna?
Yeah, I was about to say, you know, on the Paramahansa platform, we'll see that everybody's already attracted to Krishna. Yes, by spreading the holy name of Krishna. There's nothing new. Spread this chanting, spread these books. Jaridako Tarika Krishna Padesh. Wherever you go, wherever you meet, Krishna will be. Krishna will attract.
As Vaishnavas, when we sometimes speak about the Mayavad philosophy, it sometimes we represent it in such a way that it's so obvious for anyone to see that it is wrong. But historically, when we see that different Vaishnavacharyas, for example, Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur himself, he had taken like 4 years to actually properly learn the Mayavad philosophy, you know, staying in Jagannath Puri, and also we have the pastime of Ramanujacharya. For 27 days or something, he had a debate with the Mayavadi Digvijay Pandit. But still, it was none of them, both of them could not defeat each other. So, as Vaishnavas, when we are actually representing Mayavad, many times it seems like it's so obviously wrong. But aren't we really simplifying things and probably not representing it so?
The thing is, in the days of previous days, people were sophisticated. So you would meet Mayavadis who would offer sophisticated arguments on the basis of Vedanta Sutra and quote Shastric references and give grammatical analysis. And so you had to answer by quoting other shlokas and giving in a proper interpretation of the grammar and, you know, logic and so many things. Nowadays, it's hard to find a good Mayavadi. You know, the general level of Mayavadi philosopher is like, I mean, it's all one, you know what I mean? Like, you know, the absolute truth has no, you know, the supreme is whatever you think the supreme is, that's the supreme. You know, they don't get rigorous in their logic. They don't have a sophisticated understanding. They themselves, you say, I believe in, you know, I'm a follower of Shankaracharya. So you ask him, what did Shankaracharya teach? Everything is Brahma. And yeah, what else? No, that's what he taught, everything, you know, simple. They themselves, in their understanding of the philosophy, don't get very complicated. So as a general rule, we also don't have to get, there's no need throwing Vedanta Sutra verses and sophisticated grammatical analysis and all the other things that you might find in the writings of the Purvacharyas, because people don't deserve it. In the event that we were to meet such sophisticated arguments, then we would have to meet them with sophisticated response. But the other side is, all that complicated logic and word jugglery of the Mayavadis finally is sort of obscures the simple blunders of their philosophy. Finally, for all the complexity of it, it's very simple. I was just in Bangalore And I happened to be staying in the legal office where Dayaran Prabhu is sometimes there. He was out of station. You know, there's piles and piles and piles of pleadings from this Bangalore case. And it's, you know, so it gets, you know, very complicated, and in reference to this law and that law and this citation from this legal authority and this and this, you know, pages and pages and pages and pages. But the case is actually very simple. You know, if you finally get down to it, you could put the whole case on one page. And the rest of it is just kicking up dust, which is, especially Indian lawyers love to, you know, to throw dust up in the air. And the dust is, and not only lawyers, everybody, you know, throw as much dust up in the air in the hopes that the jury or the judge will start getting bewildered by all the dust. And the case is very simple. You know, my client shot a policeman. So forget all the dust. It finally boils down to that. My client was robbing a grocery store and he shot a policeman. But we make it very complicated with, you know, his whole life story and his mother you know, he was on the border. He came, yes, he was in Maharashtra, but he's actually from Karnataka, and so the case should be tried here, but not there, you know, it's all complicated. But the real case is very simple. So however you slice it, the same thing, Sariputta is dealing with sophisticated scientists, but it finally comes down to something very simple, that they're trying to derive complexity from a source where complexity is absent. Now that's a simple objection. But sometimes, especially, almost always, the fault in a faulty theory is very simple. You know, pages and pages and pages and pages and pages of equations, but what's wrong with it, it could be said in one line. And that's how it is with Shankara's philosophy. It's so sophisticated, so complicated. Finally, it comes down to one thing. The absolute truth has no variety. Where did the varieties come from? If everything is one, how come we have two? And that's a one-line objection, but it's a showstopper. You know, it's a one-line objection, but it's enough to, you know, make a big sophisticated, a big sophisticated airplane. All you do is bang one hole in it. Down it goes. Okay.
Maharaj, in the third canto, when the four Kumaras go to the spiritual world, they enter Vaikuntha Loka. They said, tell that the same form what we were meditating on is now visible in front of us. And it is mentioned in that purport, Prabhupada's right, that although they knew that this is the same form of Vishnu, they were attached to the impersonal form, or impersonal, they were impersonalist. So I wanted to know what is their position, and is there any difference between impersonalist and Mayavadis?
Impersonalist and Mayavadis. Prabhupada explains that the Mayavadis, impersonalists, Mayavadis is a general term. They think the world is Maya. And there are two species, the impersonalists and the voidists. But we use this term impersonalist more generally to mean all the Mayavadis. As far as the Kumaras, there's an idea which Prabhupada calls philosophized Vishnu. We meditate on the form of Vishnu, but where our target is the impersonal Brahma. So we meditate on Vishnu as a sort of sadhana, as a sort of means to reach that impersonal absolute. But the Kumaras went beyond the material world and they found that this Vishnu is there in the eternal realm. He's more than just a conceptual device for attaining a higher realization. Yes?
We advertise many times, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And we compare Mayavadis, saying that all Mayavadis have no rasa. because they have no relationship with God. They don't talk about it. And I have not met many Mayavadis, but a few Mayavadis I have met. They have been sincerely practicing their process. And they came out to me as very peaceful, satisfied, happy, very cheerful. I was wondering how they can be happy, you know. Because they don't have Krishna.
Little happiness from having turned their back on this material world. Not exactly happiness, it's like relief. So if a person turns his back, the materialists are all in a tizzy, all racing around because they're chasing sense gratification. So if there's a pakka mayavadi, then he's actually practicing. Then he's turned his back on these things. And then he'll be a little peaceful, more spiritual and so on. But he's not actually peaceful because he wants to become one with the Absolute, which is not possible. Therefore, Kaviraj Goswami says, Bhakti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sokala Ashanti. Krishna Bhakti Nishkama Deja. My body still has the desire to become one, which is not constitutional. So despite being outwardly peaceful and so on, you know, no problem. Adishuddha Buddha. Shall we stop here? Okay. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna, blessed is your
God.
Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande. Excuse me?
Let's